In this episode, Ryan and I discuss bandwidth and its value, marginal business practices, and a case study in refugee rescue. It went long and in-depth, and we had fun. Hope you enjoy listening. Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery.
I'm your co-host, Ryan Griggs.
Look at that extra little green gleam in his eye. Look, this has the origins of what we're going to talk about today. Really, the origins are here to make a smoking hot episode. My opinion.
Or three. Yeah. It's been a week, and it's been... So here we are, April 2024. My little baby county outside of Dallas is about to be inundated with all these people coming in to attempt to view the eclipse.
And everybody else in that path.
Yeah.
Can't get a room.
Somebody shared a thing like there's visibility in Texas is supposed to be terrible.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so y'all can cancel your plans. Like, right. Turn around.
It's going to be cloud cover. You're not going to be able to see it anyway. It's going to be dark anyway, right?
But here we are on the tail end of the release of the two-part series, Barbarians at the Gate. I forget the exact episode numbers, but very recent episodes here in early 2024. And a lot of positive feedback. So thank you. And I seriously mean that. Thank you. Because as we were discussing prior to turning cameras on, I get a little nervous sometimes in the aftermath of one of these episodes where I wonder, it's like, oh, did I go too hard or...
Too far.
Yeah.
You know, my comment to that is, yeah, you probably do go too far. I mean, we don't cuss, we don't mislead, we're telling the truth, and encouraging people to think. And sometimes it gets a little passionate. So yeah, the lines that are crossed, in my opinion, are some of the people that have preconceived ideas of what they're doing, or they don't want to hear anything that opposes their thinking or their action. So, but what other line could there be? I mean, we're not uncivil,
right?
You know, there's stomp on the line. I hear often, also before the mic was turned on, every week in and week out, and I appreciate that. I hear from clients, from prospective clients, that are very encouraging. You know, they say things like, James, you know, you say you talk slow and just speed it up 1.5. No, it's we see the critics elsewhere on social media. You know, y'all are right. Keep going. Pour it on. And so, thank you for the encouragement.
No, it's definitely, it means a lot. It seriously means a lot. And people who have clients and potential clients who have contacted and have nice things to say, it really does help. Now, don't go blow smoke, okay? I don't need anybody's approval, but I do appreciate genuine feedback and encouragement. But since those episodes came out.
It seems like he's got a week after week piling up with these great experiences. I mean, there's been a string of them.
It's a season of change, man. I mean, things are going down. I mean, I want to specify particularly in relation to that last point about the nature of commissions. You know, when people want to talk about how agents get paid. And I got
this is an article that you wrote, and then you also published that. Did you publish that on Facebook as well?
It's shared there, yeah. But okay. So on my Medium blog, I just got a little tired of it. So wrote out, it took me like 8 hours. I don't know what the word count is. It's very long. It takes like 30 minutes to read. But there's an essay on my Medium blog called Let's Talk Commissions, and it'll tell you more than you ever thought you cared to know about the way life insurance agents get paid and the way they have been paid. This is not anything new. It's information that is often not well known. And there are... briefly, some connections. Well, let me say, I specifically address the allegations that those who would argue for a relatively larger percentage of the total annual premium outlay to be allocated to the base premium than the illustration software might say is strictly necessary, right? People like me, James, like, we don't feel the need to snuggle right up to the IRS bear and just poke it in the eye, right? Having a little bit more than is strictly necessary, and maybe substantially more depending upon the individual's desires, how long-term oriented they are, their urgency for their need for capital, right? So In allocating for in suggesting or proposing that, hey, maybe you have a little bit more to the base. There's an allegation out there that the only reason you do that is because you're a dirty commission hound, right? So that is specifically addressed. And in the future, when folks share that question with me, that is what I will point them to, is that that essay. So you might like it, you might not. Because I had, and it's still, you know, wafts around in my mind, you know, get these feelings when I'm talking to somebody where through a lengthy advisory process take a lot more time than a conventional insurance salesman might on the front end, and very educational, and then at the last minute to start saying, you know, I want to see what you're paid every year on the illustration, meaning on the company's letterhead, right? Because I don't trust you to tell me, I need to see it on the company's letterhead, what it's going to be every year. And then here's what sends me to the stars, and it's my opportunity to work on my ability to give grace. But when I say, no, we're done, bye, when I end it, then comes this reaction. And this is the reaction I want to talk about. It's this, as though I'm suddenly, or the individual is suddenly struck with pure angelic innocence. Yeah. All I wanted to do was get some answers to some questions. Are you saying you won't answer my questions? You know, and that is, to me, is a form of gaslighting, right? The insecurity that one learns by spending time swimming around in the swamp of noise out there online about how you need to question everybody you work with. Hey, fine, do what you want. But I'm not responsible for indulging that, nor will I be. And the idea that somebody is bringing a special gift, right? They're going to bring a special gift to me to sell them a policy so I can make some money. Oh no, you have me confused with someone else.
Well, explain that, because that's a little bit different, or in addition to maybe in a particular case. Somebody bringing you a gift, and I know that it is published, media, blog, and it's beautiful, okay? But go a little deeper into the gift concept.
Yeah, because there can be behind this, like,
I love it.
I'm so innocent.
It has to do with the commissions, right? So I'm going to bring you a gift. Well, you go.
Right,
you,
yeah, you, yeah. I'm giving you the opportunity to be a punching bag of my questions so that you can earn my business.
That here's kind of what I was alluding to. You have somebody that's newly licensed or wants to be licensed, right? And hey, Ryan, I just want to know if I can get licensed, and then then I can refer people to you so you can revenue share with me. I don't want to do any of the work. I don't want to do any of the service. I'm never going to answer my phone 1 year, 2 years, 3 years from now, or whatever. Oh, wait, I didn't even think that far. I just want to get paid. So, you know, I'm bringing you this business.
Yes, right.
A gift, as a referral,
and that is a very common idea. In fact, I've shared about this particular experience I'm thinking of. I've shared about this on the show before, but you know, I have been engaging with an individual for probably over a year now, although I haven't heard from him recently, which is fine. But he had, after several calls, wanted me to have a group call, including some other consultant.
Oh, yeah.
He had apparently been engaged with, and I, not understanding what was going on, agreed, and we had that call. And then in the aftermath, the other consultant wanted to talk to me directly, and so silly me, did it again. And that's when he said, oh, you know, the standard, you know, business
in our group, right? Like, we have a group that you're not in, but in our group, this is how we do it. And I'm shocked that you didn't know this is how we do it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So it's customary to collaborate, which means you pay, which means I have the opportunity to pay him half of what I would have earned in doing business with this client, the value of which I needed that other consultant for absolutely nothing. right? So that this is the kind of thing I'm talking about. Oh, I'm bringing, you know, what James is referring to, what I refer to in the essay is the idea that some agents out there, you know, they might come to another agent who maybe is perceived as a mentor or senior or someone they could partner or collaborate with. There's all sorts of very glamorous, very glitzy Hollywood type words. And one of them in this business is the word collaborate. And when that word comes up, just start looking for the exits. It'll make the exit more efficient when the time comes. but that's one of the words. And so, yeah, this, it's the idea that how could you say no? What do you mean? I'm here to give you something that you otherwise wouldn't have had, right? And so that's the setup. The idea is
and the assumption that you don't have anything to do, that you don't have clients, prospective clients that you're currently working with,
right?
And there's a real relationship that's mutually beneficial. The whole idea of mutual benefit is exists, but then it's perverted with this idea that, you know, you're not busy, you don't have anything to do, I've got this low hanging quote unquote fruit, you know, somebody, they're just ready to write a check, I'm going to send them to you so we can revenue share. I mean, that's a perversion of mutual beneficial relationships to me.
Yeah.
Right. But it's the assumption that you don't have anything to do. Right. It's the assumption that you don't have any clients to speak to, or prospective clients to speak to,
or a dissertation to write, or auctions to attend, or anything else, or paint to watch dry,
or how much revenue that you would potentially give up by working with someone else.
There it is. And that is, so to crystallize it economically, we could say that the trade-off, the implied trade-off is wrong, right? The idea that the trade-off is either I'm getting something I wouldn't have gotten otherwise, or I get nothing, right? That's the trade-off. That's the alleged trade-off. That is wrong. It's a false dichotomy. The trade-off in the decision is, for me, either I spend time, effort, and energy on this case where there will be a reduced payment to what I ordinarily expect versus nothing is not the alternative, right? The counterfactual is not nothing, right? It's not I'm going to sit here and twiddle my thumbs, or I'm going to go get the special gift in the form of a reduced payment on a case that I know about, which I know nothing, right? That's not the trade-off. The trade-off is I get to go into that. I get to go do that deal with the split commission, the reduced payment, or I get to go do one of the many things that I would much rather spend my time, effort, and energy on, just one of which is spending time and attention with clients who do not busy themselves with counting my money. Right? That's another possible use of my time, one that I greatly enjoy and have clients who I, another one, current clients. I'd rather spend time talking to current clients where there is no new revenue generation, where there's just a relationship that I can
and
build.
Maybe they want you to be well paid for your experience, you know, and if I can add, that's almost like looking for a shortcut. I've counted the dollars previously from time to time that I've spent on my personal education, you know, in my professional education. And it's like, oh my God, most agents are not willing to pay the price that it costs. Not always in money, but you can, you know, assign an economic value to anything. But it's like they're looking for a shortcut. I don't want to learn. I don't want to know what you know. I do want to know what you know, but I don't want to pay the price to know what you know.
Right.
You know, so it's like here.
Make it easy on me.
Yeah. I don't want to pay for my education. I want to get paid, period. You know, it's looking for a shortcut.
Yes. And then consider that type of mentality that some agents have is often rewarded.
Absolutely.
With a contract.
And what type of professional participates in that? Because you kind of touched on that in your article as well, your essay.
It's necessary that those who are, this is just economic, this is not about anybody in particular. Nope. Someone's going to take offense, fine, it's taken, not given.
Cross those lines out there, people that are looking to be offended.
Yeah. So look, who is, might ask you a question, who is most likely to want to split the commission with the other agent? Well, if the decision is about the next best alternative, if we're comparing what's my opportunity cost, well, then it must be the case that the people who are willing to work for less are the ones with the lower opportunity cost.
What?
Yeah. In economic terms, we'd say they're the ones with the lower marginal value revenue product. In basic words, we'd say those are the ones who are less productive. Those are the ones you might not want to learn from.
What?
Now, look, so is...
Just saying.
Is there... So what do you... Okay, so then take that one step further. Okay, well then if somebody comes and says, hey, I have a special gift for you in the form of this case where I'm going to pay you less than you would normally get paid, what I hear is them saying this reduced payment case, this opportunity to make less than you normally would, is me saying to you, your time probably isn't that productive. Your time probably isn't that profitable or that value generating, right? Because why else would I offer it? I'm offering it because it's a good thing. And, you know, you're not going to do, what else are you doing anyway? Come do this.
But it's a gift, Ryan. I'm being
benevolent. But it's a gift. And there's the beautiful, it's a gift. No, it's an insult, right? It's, now then, of course, of course, people say, well, is there never a reason to split commissions?
No, you're not talking about that.
Not talking about that. It's an important, there can be unique cases. There can be situations where maybe that's appropriate, but that's a case by case type of deal. If we're talking dynamically over time, sustainable, we're talking about a relationship, about working together over time, coming into this business, I think the real price is loyalty. And because that's the only way it works out for the more productive of the two, right? And then even further, those who put them...
Man, agents, are you listening, please? It's a fair question.
Those guys out there who... Because this is not just in IBC. This is on the business coaching consultants.
Every profession. You know,
right? People who have to... tell you how productive and profitable and worthy they are. Okay. This might be an indication that you're being sold a perception, right? Value generation speaks for itself. Okay. When I first got into this business, I didn't go online and say, oh, who in IBC is talking about how great they are, how much they can take your business to the next level, how much they can 10X your income, all this kind of thing. I didn't do that, right? And it's good because if I did, I wouldn't have found James.
Didn't you survey the marketplace? I'm kidding.
You know what I did? I went to the source. I came upon an idea I thought was very interesting. I was very curious. That inspired a lot of passion and interest in me for myself. And so I went to the source. And back then, the man who is the source was still down here on this level of reality, walking amongst us. And so I went to meet him. And then here we are, right? None of this, I got to go get the 10X thing, the professional business. I need to listen to the people who are going to tell me how great they are. No.
And pay for it.
None of that. Yeah, and then pay for it. The idea out there that people are paying four, five, six-figure coaching fees, and whatever other business, fine. But in insurance and IBC, I'm like, I don't know.
I love the ones that can't get a license or had a license and lost their license. I'm not particularly or specifically about anyone. There are these types out there. There are these characters out
there.
Had a license, did well, whatever, in their own mind. Lost their license for whatever reason, not doing well in others' minds, whatever. And now they don't have a license, so they can't get a contract. Oh, but I'll get my spouse license. And these life insurance companies allow that.
They allow
it. And then they're like, oh, well, the guy, the individual, the person, the female, they could be male or female, that is using all these things that we're going to talk about, because this up to this point was nothing was shared this morning before the mics went on. These are conversations that Ryan and I speak often, talk about a lot of these things in depth. Okay. They use what we're going to talk about. They have those business practices, can't get licensed, right, had a license, whatever the history was, good, bad, or indifferent. And I believe most people are redeemable. Okay. So since I can't get paid commissions, or maybe I don't have a spouse and can't get them licensed, so well, I'll just charge a coaching fee. All right. Show you how to sell something.
Right.
It's like, there's nothing new under the sun. And there's a lot that goes on in the financial world in every profession. And I'm not even, I don't even want to bring it all out. But there's legitimate reasons for you, the consumer, to be suspect. Right. The life insurance industry, and I've said it many times, they continually earn the black eyes that they get. They deserve them. Right. So if you want to, like, maybe quit giving gangsters contracts. Well, what do you mean by gangster, James? I'm talking about the type of individual that goes from company to company, and their business that they ride is not, there's no long-term value there to the insurance company. There's short-term value there for the people who want to get promoted within the insurance company. It's like, oh, revenue went up, sales went up this year, but then is it durable, right? Is that business durable? No. Well, the revenues went up and I'm going to retire, so I'm gone, and my whoever comes behind me, they'll deal with the repercussions of that marginal business that looks profitable. That is the same idea and the same concept of these skinny-based policies, these jank, I call them Frankenstein-based illustrations that they're created. And it's like, oh, we'll gin some revenue, then, and I'll probably share it with everybody on whomever is willing to send me a referral. I'll revenue share with them. And so everybody gets paid, but at what price? What's the cost over time? And generally, and say it for a reason, W.C. Fields, if you're young, go Google it, black and white, comedian, you know, he's like, well, there's three people in the arrangement, right? The consumer, the policyholder, the payer, the insured, the agent, and then the company. And it can be applied to the financial world, any, most every profession. Well, the agent made money, the firm made money, and two out of three ain't bad. You know, I mean, it's applied here conceptually, actually, and it's just another area which these flawed ideas and flawed thinking is applied.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and I want to say too, like in the life insurance business, you know, training, quote unquote, training, mentoring, mentee, you know, there has to be a transfer of knowledge, right, for something to continue, whether whatever it is, right? In the life insurance industry, you know, the average agent is like 62 or 3. You know, there's a wealth of knowledge that they have, good, bad, or indifferent. And if they don't transfer that knowledge, it's going to die with them. I mean, just think how much knowledge died with Nelson Nash. Right. Think how much knowledge died with Tesla and everybody else who's lived in the past. Right. And it takes time to transfer that knowledge. That, and I believe there's value in that. Right. So the idea of revenue sharing, case splitting is very old in the life insurance industry. And it's very legitimate when it's not perverted, in my opinion. Right. It takes time, though. I can't. No one can, you know, go get 10 influencers, right, that are excellent marketers, excellent video creators, excellent short-term presentation creators, beautiful presentations. It's attractive. It's attractive or it wouldn't work, right? And I go have a relationship with 10 of them. And not even talking about the legality of the whole arrangement, right, or the efficacy, you know, the level of ethics that actually occur, right, in that arrangement. And I'm not saying that they're all bad, but they all should go under a microscope or at least be considered, right? You can't transfer knowledge over TikTok in 30 minutes. And I have nothing against social media. You know, the idea that if I mention all the TikTok stuff and somebody goes, yeah, we use TikTok. No, you use TikTok. That doesn't mean it's good, and I don't even like to cuss. I should probably edit that out. No kidding. I mean, that's a world we live in with social media. But you can't transfer any kind of, I would want to say, lasting experience or knowledge in such a a minuscule relationship.
Yeah.
You're going to send me a referral that you don't know anything about life insurance. You can say all the buzzwords and you can talk me up and blow smoke and, you know, stroke my ego and flatter me like, oh, this is the guy. I'm going to send you to him. And then the amount of time that it generally takes in those cases to educate someone where there's a solid foundation that they can benefit from for the rest of their life. Oh my gosh, we can't even think of past next week. I mean, how long does it take to get the policy issues? Because I need to get paid.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's not, I'm not saying business can't be written there. It really can. What is the quality of that business? What is the actual, at the end of the day, where the focus actually should be, what is the true benefit and value to the consumer? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, let's don't even talk about them as long as they write a check and you get paid and everybody gets paid and we've revenue shared and I can talk about it. And
yeah,
we weren't even going to talk about this.
That's fine. This is all good. I think in the, in any kind of beneficial relationship, be it with an agent and a more senior agent, like a mentor mentee, or be it with an advisor and a client, right? In any kind of relationship where there is this transfer of knowledge, in some of those situations, it's also, and I think this is meaningfully different than just transferring raw knowledge, it's something like the nurturing or the cultivation of understanding, right? It's a little be nerdy here, but Mises talked about the idea of Verstehen, German term for understanding. This is something different than sort of data accumulation, right? Having a collection of facts or of observations, cultivating the understanding, the analytical ability, that is something different. You can call it softer. You can call it wisdom. You can call it intuition, maybe. Maybe in its advanced form, it is intuition. But that is something different. And if you're seeking out relationships, either on the professional or on the consumer advisory side, where you might hope to gain a better understanding, a deeper, more vibrant, more nuanced understanding, rather than just acquiring some commodity, rather than just acquiring a piece of property, rather than just buying a thing or collecting some physical or specified contractual thing. If instead you also, or in addition, want to cultivate a better understanding, that is something different, right? And how you might approach choosing or offering or proposing or approaching somebody under that goal of wanting to cultivate a better understanding, it's going to be fundamentally different, right? Than just I'm buying an item. You know, the practices and attitudes of the companies and the agents, we've mentioned this idea before, is sort of set the stage so that the advisory conversation or the life insurance agent conversation is sort of supposed to be hostile or antagonistic or difficult. And look, I get it. A lot of times that is what it's like because you go in and you already know they're repeating the spells. They're saying the words they were told to say. There's something about human consciousness that allows you to detect disingenuous ideas, disingenuous words, things that someone's repackaging, you know, and there's all this faux capitalistic justification of the value of, you know, conducting the arbitrage and, you know, someone's performing a valuable service if they're bringing ideas that somebody else developed to a customer that other person wouldn't have brought. And look, if you can fall over yourself and figure out how to justify any kind of voluntary market behavior, I'm not talking about like the minimum necessary standard for what counts as ethical economic conduct. I'm talking about what's the ideal. What would we want if we could have our way? What would that look like? And are you going to get it? No, because we're on the wrong side of the garden. I get it. But you can move in that direction. You can course correct, as Nelson used to talk about. And I think if people look, because the other side of this is, you don't have to be the police. You don't have to be a rat. You don't have to, you know, see something, say something. You don't have to file complaints with commissions. You don't have to marinate in resentment over this stuff. Okay. You can just let it be. Let that be. People want to live on fast food. What's it to you? You know, the government was going to tax you to pay for the welfare systems anyway, right? It's not, that's just what it is. That's what we live in. And that, I do mention that in the commissions article. It's like, that's a mistake I used to make, to say that those practices with which I disagree are inherently wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Now I personally may have my own opinions about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And but it's better, it's more accurate, it's more agreeable in a sense to say that it's neither right nor wrong. It's just not for me. That's for somebody else. It ain't for me. Right.
You know, that I had a call yesterday with a lot of individuals, you know, it was a group call. And I can't recall which young man brought it up. It was either Blake or Matt, I believe. But, and we were kind of talking, and they're in the industry, right? And we were kind of talking about how iron sharpens iron, you know, learning, and then the responsibility that one should have in every profession or whatever profession they're in is to do the right thing. And, you know, it's not a right or wrong. It's not an evil, good conversation, which when I get going, I'm like, I go right there. It's like, no, it's wrong. This is why it's wrong. And right. I'll show you why it's wrong. But I agree with you. It's personally, you know, it's not for me. And I don't believe some things are good for my clients or prospective clients. And I come with my opinions. I come with my experience. I come with my biases. I don't come any other way, right? So I'm going to point out what I think is wrong and why it's wrong, whatever terminology. You know, here's the outcome of this, and here's the outcome of that.
It's your perspective, how you see it.
And what are the alternatives? And why are they legitimate alternatives to be considered, right? But in the conversation, you know, we're talking about iron. There's no question iron sharpens iron. There's no question that iron sharpens iron. But the point that was brought up, that process of iron sharpening iron has some violent elements to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sparks are going to fly. If you're sharpening iron, sparks are going to fly. So there's, you know, an element of violence. And it was pretty cool. But I looked through my notes, and, you know, I can always take better notes. And I didn't know who to attribute that to, but I'll find out. But it sat with me, you know.
That's part of it. Like, so to say that it's not right or wrong, in some sense for me, the move is I'm not here to convince anybody of anything. You know, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. I know this is really hard for the social media marketing types to understand. God bless you. May he heal you, but to approach the marketplace and just present an alternative perspective for those who are seeking it, right, is different than attempting to explain or convince, and certainly different than feeling as though I'm called to convince, right? That's not the case. I got a real kick. We'll get into this life settlement agreement thing here in a moment, but I was posting on Facebook yesterday and—
Oh, look, 30 minutes in, we're going to talk about what we were going to talk about.
I was referencing this thing that I recently did, and somebody who I met, I don't know, long ago on like a cruise or something with my grandmother, this random Facebook friend, starts an inquisition. Like, well, how do we know that this was good? Like, what was this for? I'm like,
yeah, Ryan, how do we know? I didn't post anything. I'm not the Facebook, you know, social media poster all the time. I read them.
Well, my response then was like, I missed the part where I'm entitled, or where you're entitled to know, where I need to tell it to convince you of anything.
I just want to know, where's the value? Why is it valuable, Ryan?
Yeah. Look, your insecurity, your feeling of being left out is not ipso facto entitlement to what I know.
But I have a question.
Or to anybody.
I have a question. And so I'm binding
and
you.
And there is an abundant opportunity to learn online. Right? This is why so much of what we've talked about is available. This is why the media, this is why the whole life insurance mechanic series, this stuff is out there. Right? And so look, if someone and I don't make it like to make things artificially easy for somebody is to disserve them. Now it's there's no sense in making something more difficult than it has to be. And in fact, what does need to be, what in my view is the right way, is actually very easy and accessible. What? Right? So it's actually not very hard. So I'm not saying it needs to be difficult, but we also do no service by making things artificially easy.
But it strokes my ego, Ron. I'm going to break it down for you.
Yeah.
It's a gift.
And so, like, look, when somebody gets in touch and they're, you know, I've seen one or two of your videos, it's like, yeah, we're not, it's not going to be a good fit because I'm going to have to, for that to work, I would then need to go and it wouldn't work is the thing. I would need to go and step by step, one-on-one, help you unlearn all of the preconceptions you don't know you have that should have been self-examined and discarded on your own through your own investigation ahead of time, right? And me coming in and being the wrecking ball who's just going to make everything clear and easy for you, that's not serving you. And it wouldn't serve me to expect that either, right? To approach someone and say, James, just make it easy. Send me the leads. You know what James told me when I first got in this business about how to generate leads? He didn't even put those terms, but that's how people talk about it. It cracks me up to this day. He said, you have a credit card? I said, yeah. He's like, yeah, does that have a $10,000 limit? Like, yeah, more than that. He's like, okay, if I had a credit card and a $10,000 limit and I was just getting into this business, I'd buy a case of books and go door to door selling books. That was the extent of the.
Did I say door to door?
Door to door.
Yeah.
May have been door to door, floor to floor.
Store to store.
Store to store. Yeah. And I still laugh at this today because I'm like, there's about 0% chance of that happening. But that was, the point is not that, the point is that it was so, that's it. That's what, you go do the work.
See, I missed a window of opportunity. Like, you know, because I'm very simple, you know, not the smartest guy in the room and all of that. And I always thought and still believe that I can outwork someone. Okay. So I didn't have the knowledge. I didn't have the experience or whatever when I was first starting out. So I had to go door to door, store to store, floor to floor and all that, you know, phone leads, email leads, all kinds of stuff. You know, the 1950s method, 40s and 50s method of insurance marketing, you know, because they're slower than I am. But the window that I missed, right? So I had, you know, I'd already started and I've been successful my whole career. Every year has gotten better. I'm not saying that there hadn't been tough times. You know, I've probably would have been out of business over the last 33 years. I guess it would be the last 20 years once or twice if I had not met Nelson. If I wouldn't have gone out of business, it would look totally different, right? So my wife and I, we have financed this business many times and still currently do. But here's the window that I missed, okay, when I was telling Ryan that. And so I'd already, the window that I missed, I didn't, you know, I had too many commitments to be able to do what I would encourage someone to do or what I thought I would have done knowing what I know now. And it would have been to take a credit card with a $10,000 limit, a case of the book, Becoming Your Own Banker, and probably at that time it would have been a case of the DVDs of Banking with Life. But here's what I missed. I would have strapped a GoPro to my head, right, and then gone out in public. I don't care if it has to be door-to-door on the plaza, you know, anywhere. Anybody who's willing to read and willing to pay for their education is a genuine potential person that would catch this idea. right? If they're not going to read, they're not going to catch it. No question, right? And the $10,000 credit limit probably had to be increased now because of the learning cycle, right? How long it takes to learn.
Yeah.
And the window that I missed was GoPro, right? I would have put a GoPro on my...
And here, so. I'll push it even further. Independent, if you want to be an independent agent, you're an independent contractor, okay? It's not going to help you to bring an employee's mindset to this independent contracting type business.
Well, what so kind of employee mindset? The kind that I just want to show up and get paid for my time.
It's
different from the employee that's like, I want to show up and produce and be rewarded for the production. So, I mean, there's okay.
An employee is just a cost of production that does, to some extent, what it's told. Right, that's what employment. There's nothing wrong with it. It's you're a part of another production process, and there's a set of instructions you follow them. Okay, bringing that mindset to an independent type business is you're going to experience struggle.
Yeah,
because there isn't any of that, and anybody who gives it to you, who again makes it artificially easy, makes it artificially convenient. And retains the same idea that, oh, you can be an independent agent and we will also make it easy for you. It's like the idea that, interest rates can have low fixed interest rates forever. It's like, no, you can't. The price of money changes. The price of time changes.
I love that. You know, going back and listening to myself talking, thinking and all, it's like, you know, everyone knew or most people suspected that the interest rates were artificially suppressed. You know, well, that's great knowledge. That, you know, that's good to know. You know, you're aware. What action did you take? Did that motivate any particular action? You know, it's like, for most of us, probably not. Or, you know, you'd own 300 more of whatever you were buying at that time. You know, I don't know. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But, and it's not that they're not continually manipulated, like every other market on the face of the earth. But, okay.
All right. Well, there's our introductory.
Let me ask Justin, Connor, how many videos do we roughly have that live in the free world? I think 500, including shorts. How many videos do we have that live in the client only section? About 30. All right, that exists now. And then how many do we have either ready to put into the client only section or somewhere in the production? That is earmarked for client only. About 20. Well, look at us. We're all right. So about 500 videos, including shorts that live out in the free world, and about 50 that are either in client only section or in production or ready to go, have been produced and it's going into client only section. We don't add to the client only section daily or weekly like we produce, you know, podcasts or videos that live in the free world. All right. That was for me. I might use that as we continue on.
Yeah, having but as soon as someone hears the big numbers, oh, James, you want me to go spend 5 years watching videos? No. Still just one thing required to learn the infinite banking concept.
Nothing that I do, have done, and I've disclosed it, and I'll continue to disclose it as long as I'm breathing. Nothing that I've done, nothing, not one thing that I've done or plan to do or am going to do, almost did or should have done, nothing supersedes ever, nothing in my opinion that exists in the free world right now, nothing will supersede this book, right? Even this is foundational material, the original work. And you can, no question, build upon that. Some good, some not so good. It reminds me, I was in Hillsboro, Texas, attending an event, and Nelson Nash, he came in as a guest speaker for an agent. This was before the practitioners program. And I believe they're practitioners now. I don't know. I haven't spoken to them in a long time. And I think it was the same time. It was in the same location anyway. It might have been at the same time when Nelson, he's writing, has already written his second book, which is a if you're going to build on this, Nelson already did the first work in building and expanding upon the infinite banking concept, becoming your own banker book, in his second book, Building Your Warehouse of Wealth. So he's flying in, and he's got that ready to be published, and he's waiting on my little endorsement, you know, and there were other endorsements. Yes, they don't exist now, and, you know, I'm still, obviously, I'm Irish and, you know, you know, Scottish, and I can't get over it. But he waited. He was waiting for my little endorsement for his book to publish his book, his second book. That's a big deal to me, and it's like a real compliment to me. Okay, and it was around that time that How Privatized Banking Really Works came out and was published. So around that date and time, look at the publication dates, right? You know, Nelson gave me a stern conversation of where my endorsement was, and he was waiting on that. And then he had the conversation I'm specifically talking about now. He had a book freshly printed of How Privatized Banking Really Works. And he said, James, you know what? I think I'm going to encourage people to read this book, How Privatized Banking Really Works, before they read Becoming Your Own Banker. And I'm like, Nelson Nash, why would you even consider that? And he had gotten feedback from other agents.
There's
like, oh, this is like, they should read this first. I have my clients read this book first. And Nelson's so graceful. I'm telling you that he would give too much grace sometimes. All right. And then the stern conversation continued, but it was the other way around. I'm like, no. And he thanked me, and he never brought that up again.
I kind of know how Nelson feels with the delayed endorsement for the book.
Okay, well, let's talk about that now. Come on, let's take the gloves off, brother.
I think that's a good segue. So So the book manuscript for How to Buy Whole Life, a framework for becoming your own banker, has been submitted to the publisher. Finally.
What? Yeah. What took so dang long, Ryan?
Well, mostly it was me. The first few years was me. But back in maybe August, September.
Don't make it longer than it was.
2020. So February of 2023, I asked James to if he'd be willing to write a foreword. And he, of course, agreed. And then several months went by.
It's okay.
But it took what it took.
How long did it take? You know how long it took.
I think it's 8 months.
8 months. Okay. Well, I think it's a little long, but I'll acquiesce. He's pretty dang accurate. You know, if you want to do some research and get to some details, Mr. Griggs knows how to do it. Okay. So I thought about that, right? It did take what it took. You know, it took what it took. And, you know, I'm busy, blah, 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 blah. I didn't prioritize it, whatever, however. But I don't write things willy-nilly.
Right. No, and I know that for sure.
And so I'll write something and I might come back to it and then touch on it again. And so, but the process took what it took. So I know this is going to go, this is very fun. You know, it reminds me kind of the same dynamic as when we first sat down and did a book review. The book review, and I say it, if you haven't listened to it, you should go listen to it again. And if we've ever talked about it, if I've ever spoke about it, you'll understand what I'm saying. It's like, you know, here he is young. I'm an older guy, all white hair. Right. He's an academic. I am not. He uses like the actual English language. I do not. You know, he's tall. I'm not. I'm not short, but I'm not tall. He's very tall. You know, he's all white. He used to be pasty white. Okay. I'm not.
I got a good son yesterday.
So I'm just saying that when we sat down and did the 5-part book review, the dynamic between us, and, you know, we've developed a great relationship over the years. It was that dynamic doing the book review that because I had already done two or three podcast releases, and I'm like, yeah, come on, let's, you know, be a co-host. And, you know, it's how the podcast developed. That's how these conversations, the dynamic between, you know, him and I is pretty powerful. And absolutely, I'm appreciative. So back to the book and my, you know, forward. Now I've thought about it, and, you know, and he writes a little bit about me in the book. And he sent that to me, you know, and, you know, brought a tear to my eye. Have you ever talked about what you wrote in your book about me? What do you call that section of the book?
The acknowledgments?
Yeah, the acknowledgments.
I read the acknowledgment at the Banking with Life live event.
Okay.
last year or year before? But I think that's...
Well, I hope it's just last year, because if it was a year before, then we've exceeded 8 or 9 months. You know, we're going to 24 months.
Well, no, it was before. It was just from the acknowledgments. Like, it was just my way of introducing you.
Okay.
So wherever that was, I don't know.
So I won't get into it, but he referenced a character in a series on Netflix. All right,
I don't think it's Netflix. It's Yellowstone, but it's on I think Paramount or something.
Okay, so he referenced a character in Yellowstone.
John Dutton. Come on.
I don't watch TV, you know. But let me say that I love this, because I think along about January, maybe even December, my lovely wife Jenna and I, we sat down and watched the series Peaky Blinders, right? And we loved it. And the whole time my wife's looking at me, it's like, my God, you really are Irish. I understand the Irish a lot. I understand the Irish in you. And I'm like, what? I'm not a gangster, right? Okay. Well, we had so much fun doing that, just spending that time together And then Ryan mentions it's Yellowstone. I don't know what that is. I don't watch TV, right? So since he referenced that in the acknowledgement, I had to go and watch Yellowstone to get a reference point, right, to help me finish my acknowledgement, okay? Well, if you're going to watch Yellowstone, there are two precursors to Yellowstone, 1888, 1923. So, you know, I don't like starting at the end. And so we started with the prequels, right, to Yellowstone.
Look at this elaborate explanation for how long that forward took.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And some of y'all have asked about pre-sale. I guess at some point it'll be up for pre-sale. Release date, I don't know. Let's think summer-ish, 2024.
Just have it out by, you know, October, Banking with Life event, okay?
Oh, what a good... Good idea.
You're welcome.
Okay. It'll be this year, so it'll come at some point.
So I said it went a little long, so we're going to pick it up from here next week in part two. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.